Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro. And this week, my guest is host of the Carson podcast, Mark Malkoff. Mark, welcome.
John, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, it's nice to have you on the show. This is going to be a very interesting show because it's kind of off the beaten track. So for the listeners, I want to introduce you. You are the host of the Carson podcast, a podcast that talks with guests about the legendary talk show host, Johnny Carson. Guests have included stand-up comics who debuted on The Tonight Show, individuals who worked on the show, frequent guests, and top entertainers that were influenced by Carson. And this opens up a lot of discussion because I'm fascinated by this whole process, being a big fan of Johnny myself. So let's get into it.
Yes, let's.
Tell me about your career and life before the podcast. What have you been doing? What led it up to this, and what inspired you to start this podcast?
I had day jobs on many comedy shows, late night sitcoms. I had day jobs at Letterman. I was at the Colbert Report, intern on Michael J. Fox's show Spin City. So Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I was assistant audience coordinator when Regis first started. So I've had all these TV experiences. And then when I was doing that, I was doing sketch comedy. I did a little stand-up. And then I started doing these video projects, back then they would be called viral videos, and they just kind of would get a lot of media attention, me doing these comedy videos. So I unexpectedly started going on the Today Show, Good Morning America. I was on Anderson Cooper doing, people would call them stunt videos. And it would just mainly be in New York, sometimes around the country. And then brands started sponsoring me. So I was in this world, but I was always obsessed with comedy, specifically The Tonight Show and Carson. And I always had so many questions.
Are these the kinds of videos that you see at the beginning of Colbert these days on the Late Show? The little comedy skit recorded film at the beginning?
Actually, like the video, one of my most well-known videos that I think got the most views of anything was me bringing a goat into the Apple Store in New York City. It was called Apple Store Challenge. And I've been told people at the Apple Store were watching it in the back room. I had somebody from Apple tell me that they were showing it to their new trainees as well. And it was all about my curiosity. Everything with the podcast is my curiosity. This was, I was observing that you could do almost anything in an Apple Store, but no one had ever documented it in a video. So I had all these challenges. Could you do blank, an outrageous thing in an Apple Store? And every single time I tried something outrageous, it was okay. So I really thought that Apple might have a problem with me bringing a goat into the Apple
Store.
Did
you have a cameraman with you with a rig on his shoulder so it looked all official and network-like?
You know what? I didn't, because I thought that they'd shut me down. So I think people were filming on iPhone, so it was they couldn't really do much other than, you know, maybe a goat would be some sort of, I don't know, a violation. I'm not sure. But my wife and I had a romantic date at the Fifth Avenue Apple Store, complete with a trumpet player and somebody serving us dinner. And then we had somebody holding a disco ball and we danced in the middle of the store. I dressed up like Darth Vader and got my iPhone repaired, and all the employees flocked at me and I thought I was going to get kicked out, but they all wanted their photo with Darth Vader. And then I ordered a pizza. I ordered a pizza to the second floor of the Soho store. So a pizza guy was like going throughout the store trying to find me. And he finally finds me and gives me this big pizza in a box. And the Apple Store employee said, "Did you just order a pizza to the second floor of the Apple Store?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I think that's really cool." So yeah, I was 4 for 4 in terms of pulling stuff off at the Apple Store, and they couldn't have been nicer. The video got over 1 million views. So I've done a lot of these videos. They've made the news. So these are some of the things that I've done prior to the podcast.
So you were in a productive career doing your thing, doing your comedy and doing your videos. And then there came a time when you decided that you wanted to do this Carson podcast. What inspired you to do that?
I think so much of what I do is curiosity. Can I get the answers that I want? And it was one of those things that Carson, Steve Martin said he was more famous than the president. But for somebody that iconic, for somebody that was that famous, there was very little to read about what actually went on backstage at The Tonight Show. Carson's friends were famously loyal and would not talk. So, You know, I started watching the show when I was really little on Fridays, and I didn't really get the politics. I was probably maybe 5 or 6 years old.
Was that from the beginning when he took over from Jack Parr?
It wasn't. I was born when Johnny started, not started, but it's more in the later 60s. And I didn't start watching until the 80s when I was about 5 or 6. And I started watching the show, and it was one of the, by that point, the show, had just gone to 60 minutes from 90 minutes. It was in New York from 62 to 72. 72 went out to Burbank. So it was definitely the Burbank years. And even as a kid, I would wonder who is holding the curtain open for Johnny, the guest, what is going on backstage before the show. A lot of people have compared being on The Tonight Show. It was like a party. You were let into a party. And I just had all these questions. And then when I started with VCRs, I would videotape the show. I would set it to tape, and I'd watch the show in the morning. And it was always like such a treat when Johnny would actually host the show, because by the end he was doing like 3 nights a week, like every other week or something like that. So I would watch the show, but it was just so many questions about what was going on with the show and him. And
well, sure, being in the industry yourself and kind of knowing the ropes, yeah, kind of inspires you to wonder what's going on his side of the curtain. So
I think so, because like, yeah, that's a good analogy, because so much of now, everything, they always show like what went on behind the scenes. There's very little magic still left went on the show. And Johnny Carson himself did not show what actually went on behind The Tonight Show until the final episode, May 22nd, 92. And it was 7 minutes of them just going, I think it was around 7 minutes of just a little bit of a peek. And I wouldn't even say it was a full peek of how the show was put together. And I think that mystery was such a good thing. But Peter Jones did this documentary for PBS American Masters. And after an hour and a half or 2 hours, how long it was, I had so many more questions. And it was the first time Carson's friends had ever talked publicly like this. And I got together with Peter Jones and I talked to him and I told him this idea that I had for a Carson podcast. And he said, Mark, you have to do this. I mean, we really, really bonded when we talked. And Peter Jones said, you need to do this. Tell everyone I endorse you. And I talked to him the next day, and he just told me, he was this most encouraging person. He started giving me contact information. I didn't even ask
that
for
that answers
it.
Like, one of my questions.
Yeah. Right. You know what? It was minimal, though. I mean, it was something. It was a start, but I think to date, it only got me one or two guests, but it was definitely got me in the door in terms of the credibility. But without Peter Jones, I don't know if this podcast would happen. Perhaps not.
So was Johnny the best talk show host ever, in your opinion?
In my opinion, in terms of pure host, yes, Carson. In terms of influencing comedy with their own sensibility of comedy, Dave Letterman, I would say, is influenced more actual comedy. You can look at certain shows and be like, oh, this is, you know, inspired by Letterman. Whereas Carson made the careers. I mean, Letterman, I would think, you know, Ray Romano, Jim Gaffigan, certainly in the 80s, at late night, he definitely put some people on the map. But the power of The Tonight Show, as Tom Dreesen mentioned, was unprecedented.
It seems to me like one of the keys was if you got invited back, right? If Johnny was rolling on the floor at his desk while the comedian was on camera and Johnny was giggling and laughing, you got invited back, and then you got invited back again, and then you became a regular, and then your career was off and running, right?
It's true, but at the same time, you had to be really prepared. Seinfeld was really, really prepared. Letterman was held back by his manager, Jack Rollins, to do The Tonight Show until Dave had 3 spots prepared. Because if they liked you and they wanted you back, like Stephen Wright destroyed in his debut, they wanted him back the following week. And
oh, wait a minute. What's about that about Stephen Wright? He's one of my favorite comedians.
Stephen Wright, you said, is amazing. And he did the show. He was out in Boston. Peter LaSalle, who was Johnny's producer, was out. His daughter was going to be looking at colleges in Boston, and Peter, who never ever went to clubs looking for talent, just happened to, they did a showcase for him, and he saw Stephen Wright, and they got Stephen Wright booked on Carson like a week or two later. And then Stephen Wright, who I think he was my very first guest on the podcast, first or second, Stephen Wright, he did his debut on The Tonight Show, and he could not believe that he was there. And Johnny called him over. It could not have gone better, and they wanted him back.
That was one of the techniques. If you were called over to the sofa after your skit,
Yeah.
That was a big thing, right?
It did. Like Drew Carey, it happened to Drew Carey. I think it happened to Ellen DeGeneres, was one of the first, if not the first, women to be called over. Brian Regan was called over. There had to be, you know, I think Johnny would have called back over certain people, but if they were running short on time, it was harder to call people over. But it was definitely perceived if you were called over to that couch. Like Freddie Prinze, when Sammy Davis Jr. was on the show and Freddie Prinze got called over. I mean, Freddie Prinze was called over, and within, I don't know, a few months or so, Chico and the Man, I mean, he got his own show. I mean, was shot out like a cannon. It was amazing, the power of that show.
So tell me how you learned, once you were inspired to do this podcast, and what did you have to do to learn the techniques and the technology of podcasting?
Oh gosh, I'm still not amazing on the technology part, but my wife Christine has been wonderful. I mean, she was the one that said, you know, you should get a Zoom microphone, and currently I'm talking into a, what is it called? You were telling me before,
it's a snowball mic. Yeah,
I'm doing a snowball mic, and I do these occasionally at home, but I'd say like 90 to 95% I do them in person across the usually Los Angeles or New York. And then,
Do you have trouble connecting to some of these people who are a little older, perhaps, and aren't up to speed on using their phone or their Mac and Skype or Discord or, you know, whatever, getting online with you? Is that why you have to go visit them physically, or how does work?
I just like sitting down with them because I feel like I feel like a lot of times there's the more of a connection, especially with some older people, that they actually get to see me, and we mm-hmm. can talk a little bit beforehand, and we have a rapport, and I feel like that they might be a little bit more open with me and comfortable. So, but definitely like on the phone, it's been like some of them really don't know how to do Skype, and some of them don't know how to do FaceTime, because I've done FaceTime audio, which sounds really good. Actually, I just did an episode coming up on FaceTime audio, which was excellent. But yeah, it's definitely been, the phone quality is not my favorite, but, occasionally I've had to do it. But, normally my listeners have helped me financially over the last couple years to get me to Los Angeles quite regularly, where I conduct the majority of the interviews.
That was my next question. You're in New York, and a lot of the former guests and people involved in the show are in Hollywood or in the LA area. So, how often do you have to hop on a plane and go see a guest?
I've been to LA to do the podcast. I don't know. I'm probably getting there maybe like three times a year, something like that. It's maybe four, but it is one of those things when I go out there, I try to get as many as I can get done and still, you know, the quality to me is the most important thing. And, you know, some of my guests, when I get to Los Angeles, I don't even hear till the day of or the day before that they can do it. And it's I would say, if I had to guess, maybe 3 to 4 to sometimes 6 or 7 hours of research, depending on a lot of these guests. And it's just when I'm out there is just trying to keep it all together and meet with the guests, do my research. And normally I go to their homes or their offices. I try to make it as easy for them as possible. I mean, I tell them wherever is easiest for you. If you want to come to me, if you want me to go to you, but normally it's offices and homes. And I show up, I have my Zoom recorder, and then I have one microphone that I just go back and forth interview style. And that really works for me. That's, to me, is one of my favorite methods of doing the podcast, just a single mic.
Cool. Well, we're coming to the end of segment one. I think it's time for a short commercial break. Folks, I'm chatting with Mark Malkoff, host of the Carson Podcast. We will be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage, where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you. I'm chatting with Mark Malkoff. One of the things, Mark, I'm really interested in is how you line up your guests. I know you've had some assistance in the past, but how do you approach your potential guests? Do you go through a third party? Do you go through an agency? Do you call them up out of the blue? How do you find out how to contact them? What's typically the reaction? Do they know who you are?
It's a really good question. First of all, I want to say that I never envisioned when I started this podcast in a million years that I would get some of the names that I've gotten. I definitely think the momentum has helped once I've gotten a few, but it varies from everything with me writing a letter, putting it in an envelope and handwriting an address and putting a stamp and sending it out to them wherever they are. It definitely can be Twitter. It can be reaching out on Twitter. I've done that. Facebook. I've definitely, if their email addresses, some people's email addresses are out there, I'll email them. It's really, really helpful, I find, to either try to get directly to the person or their personal assistant. If that's not possible, sometimes I will reach out to publicists. And that some publicists have been just wonderful, just amazing. And then occasionally I'll ask a manager, can you please forward this to whoever it is?
And is there a database of agents you can access where you can call the agent and say, I want to have your client on the show?
So what I normally do for the agents is IMDB Pro. So IMDB Pro, I forget how much it is a month, but most people are listed on there with their representation. So whoever their publicist is, I'll reach out. That's how I did that. But I have to say, definitely the personal contact with most of them and their assistants has been the way. Like, if you mention a guest, I can tell you how I got them. There has been some word of
mouth.
Stephen
Wright,
sure.
Elliot Gould.
Okay, so let's start with Stephen Wright. This is a great question. Stephen Wright and I, back when Facebook first started, most of the time, if somebody accepted your Facebook request and he didn't know who I was, I had met him very briefly once, but it was just one of those things where he was accepting almost anybody on Facebook. And back then, if somebody accepted you, their email address would pop up. So I always had his email address, and I sent him an email, which I thought, I just figured he'd be in Massachusetts when I emailed him. Within an hour, I get a phone call and it's an unknown caller. And a lot of times when it says unknown caller, it's somebody famous. So I pick it up, but it still doesn't occur to me it would be him. And it is him. And he said, Mark, it's Stephen Wright. I'm like, okay, stay calm. Because at this point, you know, I was just starting the podcast. And then I was like, okay, yeah, this is amazing. You'll do this. I'm happy to come to Massachusetts. He said, Mark, you don't understand. I happen to be in New York City right now. I'm in Washington Square Park, but I can only do this. I'm leaving tomorrow. I can only do it in like 3 hours. So I'm scrambling around New York City to get space for us to record this. And we did. I was able to get space for us to record it. I had very little time to zero time to do any research. And he told me, he's like, afterwards, Mark, normally these things take months to set up if I even do them at all. But it's because it was Johnny Carson. Where you ended up, where you wanted to record, was one block from where I happened to be staying. And he's like, it all lined up. It was just one of those things where everything happened to line up. And there's definitely been a lot of that with the podcast. Elliot Gould, I sent a letter, some address. I think it might have been his production company or his office. And he called me. He personally called me and left a message on my voicemail. And we talked on the phone a bunch of times. I tried to get him when I was in LA and he was doing a sitcom and it wasn't possible. We talked a couple times on the phone and we enjoyed each other's company.
Didn't know who you were?
No. I mean, I just try when I either email or do, when I email people or I send a letter, I just try to say credibility. You know, I live in New York City. I've been on CNN. I've been on the Today Show. I try to do credibility. And then I say, would you be a guest on my Johnny Carson themed podcast, the Carson Podcast? Previous guests include Mel Brooks, Carol Burnett.
Previous guest is a really good way.
I think so, but
use that technique.
And like Peter Jones, who did the documentary for PBS early on, said, tell everyone I endorse you. So anything I could do to stack the deck that I had some credibility there was the way to go. And
is it getting easier over time?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely. The credibility has helped. They've done 180 of these. And the thing that I found that I had no idea is, first of all, the power of asking, because there's certain people that I was like, I'm probably not going to hear back, but I've been pleasantly surprised by certain people. And the second thing is just, you know, I've done 180 of these. So just telling people, you know, I've done 180 of these, and these are the people that have done it.
Over how many months or years?
I've done it over 4 years, but the thing that I didn't expect is how much people really wanted to talk about Johnny. There's certain people that might get to talk about Johnny for a minute or two in an interview, but some of these people, he was such an influence in their life, and they've never been able to talk long form on Carson. I think Stephen Wright's probably one. So it is one of these things where people, and I didn't realize this till I started, that people really wanted to talk about him and how much they adored him. I mean, there are certain people that I've tried to get on the podcast. Wayne Newton, Paul Rodriguez, Joan Rivers before she passed away.
Yeah.
I worked with Joan Rivers. I'd met Joan Rivers. She was so nice to me, and I really wanted these people on. All I want is people to come on and be authentic about what their relationship is with Johnny. And I would have loved to have Joan Rivers on. I tried to get Melissa Rivers on. So I'm not trying to get all guests that are pro Carson. I mean, I just want people to come on and just be honest with their experience. I had no idea when I started this podcast, by the way, that people would had so much admiration for him personally. I knew as a host they did, but my expectations were, I just wasn't really sure. But the people that I've talked to, a vast majority of the people loved him.
I noticed that your show with Elliot Gould, which I was able to listen to in part, went well over an hour and a half. How do you prepare? Do you just sort of sit down and kind of just do interactive, spontaneous discussion, or do you try to develop an agenda ahead of time?
Yes, you are very prepared. I try to go in as solid as possible with questions, do as much research as I possibly can, especially on their Carson appearances. Elliot Gould, when I talked to him on the phone, I told him, according to online, which isn't always true, the first time you did the show, when I gave him a year, he said, I did the show way before then. So
I heard that.
I tried to watch as many appearances as existed, because pre-1972, most of them were erased.
Well, tell that story.
Sure. Perfect. So Johnny premieres October 1st, 1962. He's in Burbank till April of 1972 in New York, and he heads to Burbank and starts in early May of 1972. And unbeknownst to him, NBC erased the first 10 years of The Tonight Show. Yes, there are certain kinescopes, and people did save some things here and there, but Johnny didn't know this. He was really upset, as he should be.
Why did they do that? Was it because they needed blanked videotape?
Storing them back then, apparently, I've been told, was like $500 a tape, $500 back then. And they just did not foresee the value of it. They didn't. Like Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball, obviously, they the ownership thing back then, no one cared about, like, what are you going to do with this thing? So Carson in October of 72, they just, you know, they had arrived to Burbank. The anniversary show comes up and they would show clips. They have no clips to show, almost nothing, because everything's erased. So that anniversary show in 72, what they did is they had Jack Benny. I think it might have been George Burns, Jerry Lewis, maybe Governor Ronald Reagan, who just been governor. And they were just guests. There were very few clips of anything. And after that point, obviously, they preserved everything. But it was definitely one of those things where the show started at an hour and 45 minutes and then went to 90 minutes. And just so many amazing moments from The Tonight Show were wiped away.
Didn't Johnny take, as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, financial ownership of these tapes as part of his estate so that the family could make
money
from it?
In 1980, something early 80s, he got ownership of The Tonight Show. I mean, he had so much leverage. I mean, it's still, I believe to this day, The Today Show and The Tonight Show are NBC's top moneymakers. And I mean, Carson, the amount of advertising revenue coming from Carson was unheard of. So, I mean, he had enough leverage, and he would definitely was considering leaving early on in the late 70s, early 80s. He gets ownership of The Tonight Show, and they still license to this day. Johnny Carson's nephew, the wonderful Jeff Zatzing, who was a producer for Johnny on The Tonight Show, and he is the president of Carson Entertainment Group. Whenever people watch TV and movies, you'll see Carson clips occasionally, and that's all that goes through Jeff. And Johnny owned everything.
Have there been any notable people you really wanted on the show that stand out that you weren't able to get on the show either because they declined or they were just too busy? Who are some of your hot buttons?
I always try to think my philosophy is if they say no, that eventually they'll say yes, or they could, because I've definitely gotten no's and ignored. Like, I think Drew Carey took me 8 emails. Brett Silverman probably took me about the same. So when I don't hear back, or if just I try to very politely with persistence follow up and just try to Paul Reiser took like 3 or 4 years to get on the show. It just It takes a little time. But the people that I've really, really wanted that I haven't been able to get so far are Doc Severinsen. We have talked 3 times on the phone. Doc is somebody I really want. Bette Midler is somebody who's is harder to get. Who else is somebody?
Have you tried to get Jay Leno and Dave Letterman?
So Dave, I have. He doesn't do much of this, especially if it's comedy related. I still am not giving up hope. And I have Jay has talked to me on the phone because I sent him a letter and he called me. We talked on the phone. Sometimes incident says there's 2 versions of a story. There always is 2 versions, usually, but my, and a lot of times they're the same version. But in this case, my version that my recollection is that Jay said he would do it. And when are you going to be out to Los Angeles? Let my assistant know. And from there, it's just, I like Jay. I've met him like once or twice, and his staff have all good things to say about him. I think once he thought about it, he probably didn't want to talk about some of the questions that I'd have to bring up that were a little bit harder, such as his manager.
Who took over the Tonight Show and why?
Like, it's more like his manager, Helen Kushnick, planted a false story in the New York Post that NBC wanted Carson out. Stuff like that I'm sure that, you know, Jay wasn't on the Tonight Show for 7 years because according to people, Johnny was just not really a fan of Jay. So for 7 years, he just didn't do the show. Johnny preferred Dave. I mean, I can see why Jay probably wouldn't want to talk about that stuff. And that there's more complicated things that he probably wouldn't want to talk about. I'm all about Johnny. I try to make my guests look as good as possible. And if there's anything Jay didn't want to talk about, I mean, beforehand, I would, you know, try to talk to him. And if there were certain things we could maybe not talk about, I'd likely be okay with it. But yeah, I've tried. Perhaps it'll happen at some point. I would really like that. I mean, Jay Leno was number one on The Tonight Show during his reign for almost, except for like maybe 2 years, Letterman was ahead. I mean, he kept it at number one, really good to his staff. I mean, it's a huge accomplishment.
You could talk to him about Jay Leno's garage. Yeah, I'm sure he'd would like to talk about that.
We could talk about a lot of things. I mean, I've talked to a lot of his friends, Jimmy Brogan, Carol Leifer. I mean, there's endless people. And other people, a few other people I would really, really like to talk to are Burt Reynolds is one. Steve Lawrence is another. Those are some people. Bob Newhart. Those are some just people off the top of
I'm jealous. I'm jealous. I'm instantly jealous. You get to brush shoulders with some very famous people, very accomplished actors and personalities. That sounds like you're just having more fun than the law should allow.
People have been really, really, really nice to me. I can't tell you, like, the only reason I got Mel Brooks is because Carl Reiner. I was trying to get Mel Brooks, who's, again, very difficult. He says no to almost everything, and Carl Reiner was the one who told Mel Brooks, you should do this. And that's how I was able to sit down with Mel Brooks in his office in Culver City. Again, people love it. Mel Brooks was on Johnny's very first show in October of 62. So these people, I think that they just like talking about Johnny and those days of going on the show. It's like somebody that had a really good college experience and they don't get a chance to talk about it at length. So yeah, it's one of those things where it's worked out. And I'm just so grateful to people to sit down with me. I mean, the people's
very lucky
generosity. It's just, I had no idea that this would happen.
Do you look at your website stats? I wanted to ask you who your most popular guest was.
Oh my gosh, that's an excellent question. You know, I really try not to because I'll try to do it right now because I really get overly obsessed a little bit with numbers. So I didn't for the first year or two look at the numbers to the show. I just didn't want to know. And let me see what the most
don't
popular.
Go fussing with the computer because we don't want to make Skype unhappy.
You know what? I think
Skype
the most,
is very
the
fussy about these things.
I think Stephen Wright, who was my first episode, might have been the most popular. And then Mel Brooks, I know, was up there. And believe it or not, some of the staff members did really high numbers. for the podcast. So, I mean, the emails that I normally get from listeners, the staff members, the producers, the writers, behind the scenes people, talent coordinators, are the ones normally that people really, really respond to.
Well, you've inspired me now. I've had a lot of very technical people on the Background Mode podcast, and talking to you has kind of given me some interesting ideas. If I ever want to get Stephen Wright on Background Mode, I'm going to talk to you and have you introduce us. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, gosh, I wish I could. We were going to do a second episode, and I haven't been able to. And that was like, he said he was going to do it, and I haven't been able to get in touch with him for a year or two. So I don't know if he changed his email. But my advice to you and people that are listening is always ask. I was with a famous actor. I was with a famous actor when we were talking, and he was able to get George Lucas to do a voice for something he was doing. And he knew Lucas a little bit, but everybody at Lucasfilm said, George Lucas is never going to do this. You're wasting your time. He's going to say no. And he asked, and Lucas happened to say yes. Always ask. I mean, there's just so many people that I've put on my podcast that very rarely, almost never do interviews. And they said, a lot of them said the only reason is because it was Johnny Carson. And I think the power of asking is definitely something that it's definitely a muscle, but I definitely think I've seen it firsthand that incredible things can happen from it.
Absolutely. Well, we're starting to run out of time just a little bit. I only have time for a few more questions. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the most interesting things that this experience has taught you about Mr. Carson? I mean, there's the public view of him, you know. We saw him on TV for years. We knew he played tennis. We knew he liked to play cards with friends. But what are some of the most interesting things you learned as a result of this show? I mean, that's a lot of shows, 180. You must have a really good understanding of Mr. Carson, his life and times. And what are some of the things you learned from doing your own podcast about him?
He was definitely a complicated person. He was definitely distant, and he had to be to a lot of people just because everybody wanted to be friends with him. But like David Steinberg told me that if Johnny, like David Steinberg, Rickles, Newhart, if Johnny felt comfortable with you, and his second wife said the same thing, he was almost the same guy that you would see on The Tonight Show, the same guy, if he felt comfortable. So his second wife and Steinberg, David Steinberg, they both said that, that he was the same guy. But obviously, everybody's trying to get to Johnny. When he was at The Tonight Show, he was polite. He was professional. He demanded professionalism. And when he was over at The Tonight Show, he led by example. He demanded people be professional, that they worked as hard as he was working. And I don't think he ever asked for anybody to work as hard as he did. He just demanded this professionalism. And if he perceived, if somebody was not being professional or they were being rude, if somebody was being rude or they weren't professional, he could be very unpleasant, according to one of my guests and a lot of guests. And there were certain guests like Carl Sagan, who was on the show with Johnny
so many times.
And then in 1986, he was on and he corrected Johnny on air during one of the segments. And Carson perceived that it was not good etiquette, and Sagan was never on the show again. Sagan and Johnny would go to dinner. I mean, Carson almost never went to dinner with his guests. He would go with Jim Fowler. He would go with Sagan. Michael Landon, he would. There were certain guests he would. But, I mean, if you talk to a Burt Reynolds, I mean, when Reynolds was having his difficult times, Carson was loyal to him. I mean, Johnny was more interested in his life in non-show business things. I mean, he loved tennis. He also loved astronomy. He was fascinated with Africa. He went over to Africa with Jim Fowler. He went over with Bob Wright, who was the president of NBC. He learned Russian. He learned Swahili. He was definitely a curious man. He was taking magic lessons. He was always a magician, but he was actually taking magic lessons in retirement. He was a very curious person, and he looked down at someone like Bob Hope, not because of his talent, even though he did think Hope extended himself a little. He stayed along way too long in his career. He thought Hope should have gotten out way earlier, but just because Carson perceived that Bob Hope was all about show business, all about entertainment, and Carson, that was not his thing at all. He really wanted to talk about what was going on in the day, what was popular. I mean, Peter LaSalle, Johnny's producer, said Johnny was by far the most well-read person he had ever met. And he was just not about show business. And Peter, who worked with Arthur Godfrey, Dave Letterman, Craig Ferguson, Tom Snyder, everyone said Johnny was the most normal of all the hosts, the most down to earth. And I really think when he's talking about that rudeness and being polite, that I think that goes back to his Nebraska days. But he definitely, when he would handle himself, he would be shy. He was a shy person, but he definitely, being rude was something that he tried to avoid at all costs.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, we really are at a time right now. Fascinating story. Is there anything you want to close with? Any other tidbits or interesting stories that you have on your mental fingertips? But we don't have a whole lot of time left.
Thanks for asking. We have some really great guests coming up. We have this month, we have Marcy Carsey, who worked at The Tonight Show in New York. She's in the TV Hall of Fame, Carsey Warner Productions. Fred DeCordova's longtime assistant, Billy, is coming up, which was, I think, the longest episode we've ever done. So, yeah, we definitely have some great episodes coming up that I'm proud of. CarsonPodcast.com, everything's up there, and I never foresaw in a million years that we would keep doing the podcast at this point. The listeners have been so loyal, and people, it's just nice people such as yourself wanting to spread the word. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. Is that goat video in the Apple Store on YouTube?
It is. Apple Store challenge. Who knew you could bring wildlife?
All right. I'll look for that link if I can't find it. I want to put it in the show notes so the listeners can watch it. That'd be cool.
Oh, thank you, John.
Tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, anybody can contact me by going to markmalkoff.com. You can see my contact information, or carsonpodcast.com. People contact me on Twitter sometimes. I'm mmalkoff at Twitter. And please check out my work.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been an amazing, spectacular, fun show. I never thought I would have so much fun on a podcast meeting somebody this has accomplished so much as you have. So thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I love this. You're really good at what you do, and you made me feel comfortable. I don't do many of these, so I'm always get a little nervous, but right away from talking to you, you put me at ease. So thank you for having me. This was fun too.
Great. Folks, I hope you enjoyed the show. You've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you next week.